Hello there, Gareth Jones here. I hope you had a fantastic Christmas, Hanukkah, Winterfest, Festivus, whatever it is you celebrate. And here's a post-Christmas gift for you, a bonus episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. It's only a short one, but I think you'll enjoy it. We actually recorded this segment to use in the Christmas show, but the Christmas show was huge anyway, so I thought I'd put it out as a bonus episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. It's a quiz, and I invite you to play along yourselves at home. You'll enjoy this. And by the way, Happy New Year. Here's a game for you here on Gareth Jones on Speed. And as we are about to enter the second post-truth age, if you know what I mean, where fake news and real news are said to collide, then here is a quiz which is a guideline on identifying what is true and what isn't. This is a game called Fact or Fake. Is it a fact or is it fake? I've got three questions. First, I'm going to ask questions to Alex. I don't know if you're aware of the F1 Academy, where young female drivers drive around F1 circuits in Formula 3 cars at the moment. The champion of the F1 Academy this year is Abby Pulling. Abby Pulling. She's named after her father's favourite corner at Silverstone. Fact or fake? Fact or fake?
Yes, maybe. Fact or fiction? Fact or fake? The thing, so that my rationale for what I'm thinking at the moment is that some motorsport people do get obsessed and are terribly sad and do things like that to their children. So it could be a legitimate thing because it's also a girl's name, but he'll be down the pub going, she's also named after a corner, got that one past the old board and chain. Or that could be a very elaborate ruse. I'm going to say it's fact because I know enough people who would find that funny and do it.
It's fake. I'm sorry, I made that up. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Thank God. Thank God.
Otherwise, she would have had sisters call things like maggots and beckets. That wouldn't have worked out very well. But a great idea, and I'm glad it was plausible. Good. Fake.
Yeah. Plausible lies are the best kind of lies.
Fact or fake, Alex Goy? The first speeding ticket was given in 1896 to someone called Walter Arnold in Kent in the United Kingdom for driving 8 miles per hour over the speed limit. Fact or fake?
What was this? 1896, you say?
1896.
Okay. So back then, that was before the Royal Automobile Club actually did a Royal Automobile Club thing and managed to get the speed limit. You could drive without having someone with a red flag and the speed limits weren't impossibly low. And 8 miles an hour sounds implausibly low now, but I think that's fact.
It's a fact! Well worked out, yeah. Driving 8 miles per hour over the speed limit. I don't know what the speed limit was. It could well have been walking speed at that point in history. But yeah, the first speeding ticket was given to Walter Arnold in 1896 in Kent in the UK. He arguably is the founder of the idea of Gareth Jones on Speed, isn't he wonderfully? Our first speedo. We love him. So, Alex, you were wrong before, but you got this one correct. One right, one wrong, right? Here's your next one. Here we go. The Ford Cortina was originally intended to be called the Ford Consul 225. Fact or fake?
I'm going to say fake, but I know nothing about old Fords. So.
On what grounds would you say fake? You haven't got any. Instinct?
I haven't got any. It just sounds like the kind of thing where, because Ford always sort of delineates between its vehicles, like, this is over, it's time for a new one, and the reason for the Cortina would be, this is a new car for the new modern Ford family, blah, blah, blah.
Rather surprisingly, this piece of information is, in fact, fact. The Cortina, I didn't know this, I always thought it was called Project Cardinal, that's what they referred to it as, but they were going to market it as the Consul 225. How confusing is that? There was already a Ford Consul Capri, a Ford Consul Corsair. I mean, it was bonkers. The name was changed to Cortina after the first press photographs were taken. It was inspired by the Italian ski resort Cortina d'Ampezzo, which hosted the 1956 Winter Olympics. The name was chosen to evoke the glamour of the European locations and to make the car more appealing in European markets, which is kind of crazy because they had their own equivalent, the Taunus, over there at the time. The designer, this is another one I didn't realise, the designer was Roy Brown Jr., the guy who designed the Edsel, Ford's vagina-faced car, which almost killed the company. Mm. And he was banished to Europe. Get away from America with your weird-looking cars. And he drew the Cortina Mark One. Respect to him. Didn't know that. So, It is true.
I learned a thing today.
So, at the end of that round, Zog, what is Alex's score?
At the end of that round, Alex Scoy has scored 1 point.
Oh dear, 1 out of 3. Right then. Right. You're going to do me now, guys? Who's going to do me? Zog, you're going to do me? And Alex, you're going to watch? No, you're going to score.
Anytime, baby. Anytime.
I shall keep score.
Okay, 3 questions for Gareth. Fact or fake? Question 1. During development of Rover's Jet 1, jet turbine car, Rover demonstrated prototypes running on a variety of fuels, including diesel, kerosene, vegetable oil, but also whiskey and even perfume.
My reasoning for giving the answer to this, that's a great thought, is I don't know. The truth is, I don't know the fact whether that is true enough. I'm aware of Jet One, but have you read the book Firefox that the movie is made on?
I have not.
Right.
But I'm aware that Clint Eastwood stars in the movie Firefox that is based on the book.
It is a great book, and a great film, a lovely bit of design. But I seem to remember in that there is a submarine captain who is aiding the theft of the Firefox, the MiG-30, whatever it was called at the time, I can't remember. And the submarine has had one of the forward compartments flooded with fuel that the aircraft is going to run on. And it's paraffin. So I know that jet engines will run on a wide range of combustible materials, sort of fairly simple explosive procedure under compression. Can you burn vegetable oil? Yeah, if it's viscous enough, I think you can. So I think my answer is true. Jet 1 did run on all those things.
It is fake.
Oh!
Clean lie. What is true, however, is that when Chrysler were working on turbine-powered cars, they tested prototypes that did run on, amongst other things, tequila and perfume.
So expensive.
Rover didn't do it, but Chrysler did.
Oh, trick question. I got that wrong, but fantastic. So my logic was right. It was plausible, but it wasn't true.
There you go. Okay, question 2.
Okay.
Before entering the automotive industry, Toyota was a loom manufacturer, as in device for weaving cloth. In the 1920s, founder Sakichi Toyoda invented the automatic loom, a revolutionary device that he subsequently sold to a British company. The proceeds funded the establishment of the Toyota Motor Corporation.
In the way that the guy who established Holden Automobiles in Australia was from the West Midlands and originally made carriages, horse-drawn carriages, and then became an upholsterer, and then became a car maker. Many car makers were doing something else beforehand. They were bicycle makers, for instance, in the case of Peugeot, I think, and some others. Then, Yamaha were making musical instruments and sewing machines, I believe, yes?
They still do.
Were Toyota in the business of making looms? I'm going to say yes, because they're a massive industrial concern and there is some incredible fabric work done at a very high level in Japan. So my answer is fact, it's true.
It is true, it is a fact.
Yeah!
1 point. Well done.
Woohoo! My phone just beeped to give me a point there as well. I like that.
Okay. And question three. During the Cold War, the East German Stasi secret police used specially modified Trabants, including models that they fitted with infrared flash systems installed in the door to enable them to take photos in almost complete darkness. This was a very expensive system, so they only built about 25 of these surveillance Trabants.
Surveillance Trabants using infrared to take pictures, what, like night vision, right?
Infrared flash built into the doors.
So they could drive around Berlin and take pictures without anyone realising. Well, they...
I'm not at liberty to reveal any information about any of those operations.
But of course.
You may speculate, but I'm afraid I can neither confirm nor deny.
Wow. Well, yeah, there wasn't much traffic crossing over between East and West Berlin. Any official cars would have been heavily monitored. Why were Trabants allowed into West Berlin?
I did not say anything about West Berlin. Okay. I just said that the East German Stasi operated these vehicles.
Okay, they could well have been surveilling people in East Berlin as well then. It sounds like a probable way of doing it. It's about the right height built into the doors. Did they have what was effectively night vision in the 60s? When did we hear about night vision? 70s, 80s, which means that secret organisations probably had it in the 60s. I'm going to say yes, that's a fact.
It is a fact.
Yes!
Bizarrely, the East German Stasi did modify Trabants with infrared flash in the door.
Thank you, Zog, for those questions.
Those are your three questions.
You've had your three.
How many did I get right?
Gareth Jones scores 2 points out of a possible three, putting him into the lead.
Yeah, I like this quiz. This is good. This is a game of poker. And so, who's got the last questions? For whom?
I believe it's me for Zog.
Bring it on, baby.
Right. Question one. Aston Martin's Project Vantage was, as we all know, the concept car that led to the wonderful but oft maligned internally by the then head of Aston Martin, Dr. Ulrich Beds, the Vanquish, or as they called it in Die Another Day, the Vanish. However, when it came time to develop the car that would become the Vantage, one of my favourite cars of all time, the development cars for that, by way of sort of reciprocation, was called the Vanquish, or by Project Vanquish. Fact or fiction? Or false, or fallacy, or bollocks, or whatever you want to
hang on. So you're saying that the vehicle that they were working on the way to the new Vantage was labelled the Vanquish during development?
It was Project Vanquish. So it was Vanquish. Project Vantage became the Vanquish. So some sort of reciprocity.
Yes. Okay.
They called it Project Vanquish.
Okay. Okay. So I don't have a clue. I do not know. However. On the basis that Aston Martin's naming schemes tend to be, a little bit samey and confusing. There's a lot of very similar, you know.
You are not wrong.
They
it is confusing.
They pick a theme and they stick with it. I'm going to say it's true.
I'm afraid, Zog, that is utter bollocks. No, it's not true. It's a feasible lie.
A feasible lie.
Both cars penned by Ian Callum, even though Henrik Fisker takes credit for the second. Right, where's my other question? I do have three.
I need both of these to draw level with Gareth.
You're on the back foot now. The 30-mile-an-hour speed limit was introduced by the Road Traffic Act in 1934 to slow down cars in built-up areas, but a built-up area was defined in that Road Traffic Act as having a system of streetlights by no more than 200 yards apart. Is it 200 yards? Is it three? Is it one? Is 200 fact or fiction?
Ooh. I was hoping you were going to go for an easier question there, to be honest. I'll be frank. I was hoping you were going to go for an easy answer, because as you were reading out the question, I was thinking, okay, you know, built-up area, that means streetlights. As long as there are streetlights, it's a built-up area. Come on, go. But you had to make it
tricky.
Oh,
it's distances, baby.
You had to make it tricky. Okay, that's all right. Okay.
So I was asked a similar question in the last speed awareness course I did, and they were very surprised I knew the answer was there are streetlights. So
so you had to work the idea. Okay, right. What I'm thinking about is I know that all the street lighting around where I live is certainly much closer space than 200 metres. And I'm going to assume, by the way, that this was
1934.
Yes, so. This is 1934. And was it in the? You're saying it was in the original legislation specified as 100, 200, or 300.
It was defined as having a system of streetlights no more than 200 yards apart.
100 yards. Okay, that's I was just thinking. Had you maybe slipped a? Did you give something? No, yards, meters, of course. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I'm used to streetlights being much closer together than 200 yards. But I'm used to late 20th century, yeah, and early 21st century street lighting, not early 20th century. I'm, 1930s, okay, there weren't so many streetlights around then. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to go with reversion to the mean here. I'm just going to go with true, because the last one was false. And that's all I've got to go on.
Zog, you are correct. That is true.
Oh! Fantastic.
Yay!
Your final question, and if you know the answer to this, you'll know instantly.
I'll be a happy man.
Yeah. Massé Rimatz. Most people, when they're 35, would be very happy if they owned a Bugatti. He owns Bugatti. He is the man behind the Rimatz Nevera. He's a sort of electric car pioneer. He's got an incredible brain. He won awards when he was just a teenager for coming up with mind-blowing stuff on the global stage. But his decision to get into electric cars wasn't entirely his. He's loved BMWs his whole life, always wanted to race them, got himself an E30, raced it, then let his mate have a go, and his mate blew up his engine. And that is why he started messing with electric cars, because he had a broken one to play with. Fact or fiction?
Fact.
Yes,
I knew it. And but hey, but worth saying, it's a great story, and you have to admire the fella for doing what he's doing, having the ingenuity and the imagination, the talent and the drive to do it. So yeah, we applaud him in his journey, and it's true, and it's good.
And it's a story that you've told on this podcast, and that's clear that we pay attention to what you're saying.
Someone listens to me.
Yeah, we do.
Sorry, what was that?
We do. Wow. So, at the end of that round, Zog has scored 2 points, which means that the overall scores are Gareth, 2. Zog, 2. Alex, 1.
Right.
Which means we need a tiebreaker.
Give me
between
1 second.
Me and
my
Zog.
Reference library is over there. Let me. I'm going to find
it.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pluck a book at random, and I'm going to read a sentence from it. 2 seconds. Hang on.
Brilliant.
Okay. All right.
Well, while you're doing that, I already prepared a couple of tiebreakers. Here's a quick couple of questions while he's doing
okay,
that.
The Volkswagen. Can I just point out before you read them out? I have reservations about going to any tiebreaker round if my competition in the round has written the questions. Just pointing that out.
Oh no, this would have been if you two were tying.
Right,
so I'm just testing you out on them.
Now,
here's one: the Volkswagen Beetle was offered to the Roots Group company for free as part of war reparations. Roots turned it down. True or false?
I'm going to say true.
Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say true.
Fiction.
Fiction. Zog, you're right. It is true. It was also turned down by Morris, Austin, and the Ford Motor Company.
Wow, it's the guitar bands are dead of the car industry.
Yeah, the longest car in the world is 100 feet long. True or false? Fact or fake?
Fact. It's built some by some madman in the Middle East.
I'm going to say fact. It's just
it
too
is
silly.
True. The world's longest car is the American Dream. It's 100 foot long. It's a Cadillac Eldorado that's got 26 wheels, seats up to 75 people, two large Cadillac V8s. It has a jacuzzi, a helipad, a swimming pool, a mini golf course, waterbeds, TV fridge, and it takes a mile to do a U-turn. And it's on display at the Dieseland Park Auto Museum in Orlando, Florida. And the last one is Max Verstappen's full name is actually Max Art Verstappen. Fact or false?
Max Art.
I'll say fact because it sounds like something a wealthy idiot would call their child.
I'm going to say fiction just so that we can have a possibility of a because we need a way to split the decision here.
Yeah, the answer. Okay. It is, in fact, false because Max Verstappen's middle name is even better than that. It's Max Emilian.
Oh, my God.
Verstappen. Maximilian. But Emilian is his middle name. Isn't that brilliant? I didn't know.
It's a bit annoying, actually. It's
Well, okay, now Alex hopefully has had a moment to find something if he's getting from a book, we're going to know is true, right?
So from my colleagues, I have a rare unsigned copy of Jason Barlow's Bond Cars: The Definitive History. So, from the Bond film Live and Let Die, a film that has not aged brilliantly well, James Bond drives a bus. That is true, that is part of the film. However...
Hang on, before you finish reading this out, how are we doing this tiebreak exactly? How are we going, in terms of, are we on the buzzer? Do we have to dive in with an answer? How are we going to do this tiebreak?
I can keep going until one of you just has an extra point. So if you both think it's true, you can say true. If one of you thinks it's false and the other one says
okay,
says
okay.
True, we can do
okay.
that.
Okay, keeping the game going.
When we give an answer, it's got to be a definitive answer.
Mm-hmm.
We can't waffle. Yeah. It's got to be good.
Yeah. Only one answer, your answer, first answer.
False. Okay, I'm right, yeah. good.
Yeah.
I won't lie, boys. This one, if you know the answer, you deserve to win straight out anyway, so it's fine. In the said Bond film, Roger Moore was taught how to drive a bus. He was given a crash course at the Chiswick Depot by a man named Morris Jones. True or false?
I'm really considering this. Roger Moore, Mr. Jones, will you teach me how to drive a goddamn bus? We've got to shout out our answers at the same time. You going to give us a countdown?
Or whichever one of us is confident can just go for it and preempt. Yep.
I'm going to say true. Zog's going to say true too, so he stays in the game.
I mean, I was going to say true. I wonder if I should say false at the beginning, but I'm going to say no. I think it is true. I think it's true. Yeah, I agree.
You are both incorrect. Morris Pratchett was the man's name.
Oh, cruel. Okay. This time Zog has to answer first,
okay,
then. Come on, what's the question?
Right.
Okay, hang on.
Also from the James Bond Book of Christmas Questions. I love it.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes. Right, hang on. Let me find another question. Chat amongst yourselves and edit this bit.
I love it. Here's another one from the tiebreakers I made up. There's a few more here. One of these car names is made up. Right? Is it the Mitsubishi Topo BJ? Is it the Fiat Penne Erguido? Is it the Dodge Dart Swinger? Which one of those three? The Mitsubishi Topo BJ, the Fiat Penne Erguido, the Dodge Dart Swinger. Which one of those three is made up?
The Penne, the middle one.
Is the correct answer. There is a Mitsubishi Topo BJ. The Dodge Dart Swinger existed in the 70s. And the Fiat Penne Erguido means the Fiat Erect Penis in Spanish.
Right.
And it doesn't exist.
Yes, but intended for the Italian, not Spanish market.
Yes, indeed. So they'd never know. Come on, Alex, give us one. You've got one.
Okay, I have indeed. that this is another very dickish one. So, for the film GoldenEye, Bond defected to BMW as the star car. Now, it was obviously a huge deal, and BMW US created a special edition Z3 007 James Bond edition. 100 cars were made. They had... Are you ready?
Go on.
Yeah. They were painted in Atlanta 309 Bond Blue with a taupe leather interior, W7 floor mats, a rear luggage carrier and fitted luggage, and a few other bits. Now, is that true? I'm hoping to kill you with frustration.
I'm going to get you to say false. They didn't have the shopping basket.
It was Atlanta 306 Bond Blue. Gareth Jones wins.
Yeah! But for the wrong reason.
On the technicality.
Okay. I'm just going to point out, however, that one of the reasons that I went for true there was I thought Alex wouldn't be so petty as to alter one tiny detail in that just to make it
false. I changed the man's whole last name.
I love playing games with you guys. Round of applause, soft mic. Yeah. A nice round of applause.
I was hoping when you started on GoldenEye and BMW that it was going to be a question about BMW supplying cars for the film, because I seem to recall that a minor issue in production for the film was that they couldn't provide any prototypes for the film until very late. So the reason that you never saw the BMW Z3 with any gadgets and bits on it,
which it didn't exist,
which it would have had in GoldenEye, was because they didn't get the cars early enough. They got a car way too late, I think, was the so it came together. Anyway, there we go. Unfortunately, you didn't ask me that. You asked me some other nonsense.
If any listeners have any problems with those facts, do take them up with my good chum Jason Barlow, because it's from his book.
Superb. Yeah. Boys, thank you for playing Fact or Fake. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! Yay!
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!